Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Want to get a little more from every sip? Smartwater Alkaline doesn't just taste crisp and pure. It's loaded with everything you need to perform at your best, whether you're running marathons or boardroom meetings. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.
Welcome back to the 750. You're listening, of course, in partnership with bloggingtheboys.com, SB Nation, Vox Media. I am the ORJ Ochoa. He is the 7-5 two-time Super Bowl champion, Tony Casillas. Tony, happy Halloween to you, sir.
Nice.
That's bad, isn't it? But yeah, happy Halloween.
That's really
good. I hate to say this because some people probably. I think for the most part, people like Halloween, but this is like one of my favorite holidays, but it's really not a holiday because we don't,
you don't get off work or anything.
Yeah, you don't get off work, we're working. But I've always liked Halloween. I think that it's almost like Christmas. You know, you can have a little bit of kid come out of you and get all into decorating and costumes and everything. And as you know, we talked about this right before we started the podcast. I tweeted this some really throwback Halloween costumes. It's pretty absurd. But anyway, happy Halloween to you and hope all the ghosts today come true.
Yeah, you know, neither of us are wearing a costume. See, if I wore what you're wearing right now, it would be a costume because you're wearing a jacket that says alumni with a Cowboys logo. So that's real for you. You know what I mean? But if I wore it, it would be a costume because I'm not an alumni of the Dallas Cowboys.
Well, I mean, and you made the comment you like it, and it's really, it's kind of, they don't make them anymore because I think about two years ago, I was playing in a golf tournament, and they issued this to the alumni legends, and it's like one of my favorite jackets. But I'll let you borrow. Here's what I think I should do. I know you wear your winning polo shirt.
Victory Polo Monday. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, on Monday. Maybe I'll start wearing this, or maybe if I wear this the week before the Cowboys play, and if they win this week, and especially on the road, maybe I'll just make that my usual Monday attire.
I like that.
We'll try that.
it's a good, not costume, but good thing to wear, good item of clothing. I asked you this before we started taping about Halloween costumes, something else, but I'm going to ask you now that the mics are hot, what's the worst Halloween costume you've ever worn? Because you tweeted out a photo that I think is in the running, but I'll tell you mine while you think. When I was like 9, I think I was a McDonald's order of fries. Like I was literally like, you know how they come in the red like little container.
Exactly.
I was literally the fries, and they came with like big red clown floppy shoes that Ronald McDonald wears. That was my Halloween costume when I was 9 years old.
Well, I can't really envision someone dressed up as French fries being that bad, given the McDonald's French fries are the best. But
that's true. It's a good point.
I've seen some really tremendous costumes, and I think that's what is really good about Halloween. I mean, some people take it really, really serious, especially when there's something on the line as far as money for the best costume. And, you know, men and women can get a little creative, mm-hmm. especially women, when they think about some of the costumes they wear. I'm going to say probably my worst costume really wasn't when I was in high school or when I was 9. I'm going to say probably the worst one was I dressed up like Richard Simmons. And if I think everyone knows Richard Simmons. If you don't, just Google him. This guru of fitness wore these really, really tight shorts with the headband, with the afro and the tank top. You know, it's like an 80s look, right? I dressed up like that, and at the end of the night, those shorts somehow just kind of became more of a G-string, you know, and it was pretty a bad sight. Even we may have been a little impaired by midnight or 1 o'clock, but I would say the Richard Simmons costume was probably, it was funny, but I think, as you mentioned, it got a little uncomfortable as the night went on.
Right, yeah. A solid sort of like Saved by the Bell time period, Richard Simmons. You said fitness.
It's not a very good celebration type of costume.
Yeah, that's a good
I
point.
I didn't feel too comfortable afterward, as the night went on.
You can't do a lot of jumping, I don't think, or running. You said fitness. Did you walk around with like one of those like aerobics. Remember those like step things that people used to have, like that they would step on for like the aerobics?
Yeah. You know, I didn't do that. I think one of my favorite ones, though, is that, so I grew up loving Incredible Hulk.
Okay.
I mean, the Incredible Hulk, you know, obviously I'm older than you, but that was like when I was in junior high, high school, the Incredible Hulk.
The Lou Ferrigno. Yeah.
Yeah. Green, the original, I guess, green Hulk. But anyway, that was my favorite. So what I did is I dressed up. We used to have parties at my house. And so about 15 years ago, I got all the paint. I was all in, RJ.
Okay.
And I painted myself green, the cut off, the purple shorts,
okay,
the ripped, the shredded t-shirt. I put some really thick fake eyebrows, unibrow.
To look more exaggerated.
Oh yeah. Look like the Hulk. And you know, that was probably my best one, but yeah, you know what? Halloween's great. Not only that, you got a reason to just indulge yourself in just eating as much candy as possible until you're sick.
On the subject, before we talk Cowboys, this is a really important Halloween question. This is debated every year. Candy corn, do you like it or hate it?
Overrated.
You think it's overrated? You're wearing a cap with an acorn on it, so I thought you would like it.
No, I'm not really. No. I never got the whole candy corn traditional thing. It's kind of like what do they call the fruitcake for Christmas?
Oh yeah, that's terrible. I agree.
So and maybe people out there are like, Tony, you're stupid, man. You know, are you serious? Candy corn? No, I just don't. I don't like it. It's nothing but sugar.
Well,
how about yourself?
I'm not like the hugest fan of candy corn, but I think situationally, if you know how to eat it and you know when to eat it, and by how, I mean, sometimes you got to bite the tip off first. Sometimes you got to, like, you know, let it, you know, kind of sit in your mouth for a bit and let all the flavors soak out. Like, there's an art to it. So
it's all sugar though, RJ.
It's Halloween. I mean,
you know one thing. So the candy corn, it is sugar. That's right. I mean, think about it. There is some candy corn I've eaten before. They actually had cream on the end of the candy corn and chocolate candy corn.
Okay. See, now we're talking.
So it was a little assorted type of candy corn.
You know, in that case, though, you're really just eating it for the cream. Like, the candy corn's just a vessel. It's just a vessel.
You're right.
It's like sometimes, like, you know, I'll go get like chicken tenders or something, and I really don't care about the chicken tenders. It's just a vessel for the ranch. You know what I mean? It's just transporting the ranch to my mouth. That's all it's doing.
Exactly. But, you know, something, you have to have some substance to put in the ranch, because ranch can only, I guess, you make the chicken taste, I would say, better than it really actually is.
Exactly.
So real quick, so what's your favorite, what's your top two Halloween preferred candy?
Number one, Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. And I'm not going to lie, Tony, I'm probably the best person in the world at peeling the wrapper off and not leaving the chocolate on the, you know how like you peel it off and it always pulls off a bit of the chocolate.
You got to make sure you get every
piece of chocolate
off the wrapper.
I'm really good at that. I'm really good. Yeah. And you know, if there was like a,
even when it's melted,
dude. Yeah. See, like when it's melted, you got to be slow. But sometimes the trick.
I don't have patience.
You
got to wait. I got to have it.
Well, throw them in the fridge, because if you throw them in the fridge, it's a lot easier.
That's
number one. Number two, Kit Kats. You can never go wrong with Kit Kats. I do think that the psychopaths of the world, they bite into the whole Kit Kat. That's weird. You got to break it off. You know the.
I'm with you on that. One stick at a time, right?
Exactly. Yeah. So those are my top two. What about you?
I'm gonna go Almond Joy.
Oh, gross.
With nuts.
Gross,
yeah, it
definitely. Disgusting. Gross.
Oh, are you serious?
Dude, that's disgusting.
That's on Halloween.
Gross. That's disgusting.
Okay, well, you disagree with that one. Okay. You won't disagree with the second one, because it was your first, so I'm going to go with Reese's Cup.
Yeah, and I will say, you know, they have, like, around Christmas time, the little small ones. You know what I mean? Like, the teeny tiny ones that come in, like, the red and green and gold wrappers. Those aren't the same. They're good, but they're not the same.
You
I'm talking.
Like Almond Joy? Come on, dude.
I don't like it. I don't.
Yeah, but You young people just don't imagine. You just cannot appreciate a great, great, you know, Almond Joys. I mean, you got to have, You got to have the big almond in the middle of the coconut.
It's also a dumb looking. Oh. It looks dumb. Like the blue. I don't want blue on my candy bar. No. It looks weird.
Come on.
But
all right. Well, that's good. Well, hey, you know what? Hey, we agree.
Hey, you know what? From now
on. You got to disagree on something.
From now on, every almond joy I ever rack up in life, it's going in a Tony jar. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
And then I'll ship them over to you and we'll be good. So everybody wins. So in the spirit of Halloween, you know, we have a double edition of the 750 this week. We have episode 1 of week 9 of the NFL coming out today on Halloween, and our next episode will come out tomorrow, the first day of November. But in the spirit of Halloween, Tony, it makes sense to kind of talk about, I don't want to say things like fears, but things you're afraid of, things that scare you. And so in the spirit of that, the Cowboys are coming off their bye, and I'll say the thing that scares me right away, we've talked about it a lot, is their upcoming schedule. Tennessee's a little, okay, cool, they're like the almond joys of the NFL, but after that, you've got the Reese's. You know, you've got the big, hearty things in the Eagles, the Falcons, the Redskins, and the Saints coming up. What scares you about the Cowboys right now in a Halloween-ish way?
I don't want the fans to overreact. I guess my biggest fear is the whole deal with trading for Amari Cooper, that all of a sudden, not right off the bat, we're going to see this tremendous amount of chemistry between him and this offense. Mm-hmm. That's my biggest fear, because I think everyone wants us to pay off dividends right away, right?
Boy, that's what you. I mean, it's hard to tell yourself.
Well, I mean, we assume. Yeah. I think the fans we want Amari Cooper is going to be the answer to this team struggling offense.
Right, and I totally agree that it's hard to expect that, but it's hard to convince yourself not to want it. You know what I mean? Like, because in your mind you're thinking we paid a first round pick, so this has to work out. But I agree with you. It's terrifying that it won't, and it's probable actually that it won't.
Yeah, and I guess the second part to that is, you know, they just fired their offensive line coach and promoted
Mark Colombo.
Just promoted him.
By the way, Warrior 75. He's in that.
Yeah, I mean, so how can I not like him? And I've loved him as a player. I thought he was very passionate. He had this type of energy in him. Had a little nasty streak in him. He's been on the Cowboys staff, I think, for what, 4 or 5 years. And
you know, on the subject of holidays, I remember I went to the Christmas Day game in 2006, and that was back when the team used to stay at the Marriott by the airport. And my dad and I were at the team parking lot outside the game, and I was still in high school. And Mark Colombo came out, and he drove like a semi truck. That was his vehicle of choice. It was just like this huge, gigantic, almost 18-wheeler truck that he drove. So the guy's got an interesting streak about him, is all I'm saying.
Yeah, I saw Mark Colombo. I mean, I thought he was a tremendous competitor. And I always like watching him go downfield and try to pick someone off. I always, you know, those guys, those are the guys you have to watch out as an offensive lineman. They just like to finish people off. And then they brought in Hudson Hawk to be an offensive consultant to him, which I know Hudson Hawk, and he's getting up in age, but however that dynamic's going to work. And the second part, as I just mentioned, is that this offensive line has not performed. I don't know if it's because of the direction of the offensive line. I know they came out this week that some of the technique that he was teaching, the players didn't want to buy into, they didn't understand it. So maybe there was some disagreement there, and they waited to the seventh game of the season to make a change. And, oh, by the way, if you look at what the Cowboys have given up as far as sacks, they're on a pace to give up 52 sacks this year.
That's no bueno.
And that's ridiculous.
Yeah.
And but so those two things, I think the fear of that. Now, the first part, the Amari Cooper, that's the fear that it doesn't work out. And that the offense doesn't get on track. I think as a fan and people that really don't know the underlying things that go on with this whole dynamic, hope they don't get over excited about that all of a sudden this offense is going to come out against Tennessee and light it up. Maybe they will. Maybe they needed a new offensive line voice. Maybe this added energy to their offense to isolate on his play. But by the way, if you're going to, you know, while I'm on this soapbox, while you're going to fire the offensive line coach, why don't you look at Scott Linehan as the offensive coordinator?
Sure.
Because when you have a really I would say a struggling offensive line, don't you need to make the buys more an offensive game plan to maybe help the offensive line, or maybe, you know, orchestrate different plays that may help you get over the fact that your offensive line is struggling? That's kind of my little rant right there.
No, I think that's fair. Nice soapbox. I'm going to be honest with you. I didn't understand the whole soapbox phrase until like 5 years ago. Like, I always knew what it meant, but I didn't understand where it came from. So, but I do now. Don't worry.
You're a young man.
Anyway. So
you haven't got on that many soapboxes in your young life, I'm sure.
So I want to pause the scary discussion.
Say that sarcastically.
Right, right. I want to pause the "what are you scared of" part of this conversation. So this is the part of the Halloween party, you know, where you take the wig off for a second. You know what I mean? Because you got to do something serious. And you mentioned the changes to the coaching staff this week. We found out, and a lot of people said, "Why didn't they do this during the bye, etc." I mean, a lot of this stuff kind of happens through the bye, and I don't, you know, I'm not blaming them for why didn't you do this a week ago. But the Cowboys fired Paul Alexander, who they just hired this offseason to replace Frank Pollock, who had initially replaced Bill Callahan. But Paul Alexander out as the offensive line coach, Mark Colombo promoted, and Hudson Houck brought back in. Now, two questions for you, Tony, wearing the Cowboys alumni jacket.
Can I interrupt you real quick?
Sure.
But let me ask you this. Why do you hire a coach first year, seven games into it, and he's been there since OTA, since April, and then you decide all of a sudden that you're going to fire him and you're going to promote Mark Colombo?
Well,
wouldn't you actually kind of know that Mark Colombo is on your staff? Why didn't you promote him in the first case? Which, it makes no sense to me.
Well, so I think the political answer would be they just feel the scheme Paul has been working with the offensive lineman isn't working, etc. They want to deviate from that scheme. That would be the political answer, the answer, you know, on its face. I think the true answer is there needs to be some sort of fall guy. You know, right now the Cowboys are at a point where a singular head has to roll at the very least, and Paul Alexander is just the most dispensable. And it's worth noting that the Cowboys interviewed Mark Colombo to be their tight ends coach, of all things, back when they were formulating their staff. So they clearly have wanted him on the staff. I mean, you mentioned he's been around long enough now, and certainly within the culture of the Cowboys, you know, to a point that they really like him. But it makes sense for him to work with the offensive line, certainly. But so I think that's the true answer. They need somebody. Paul Alexander is the most dispensable guy, because Mark Colombo, they have an answer to that. You know, if they move on from, you know, whoever else, I don't know that the answer, you know, it's like the scene in Indiana Jones where he moves the idol and puts the bag there. There's not really another bag to put in like there is Mark Colombo at the offensive line position. I think that's what my takeaway on the situation is. But my question to you is going to be, you know, none of these guys necessarily played a lot of time with Colombo. It's not like that. But he is a guy who played. He played for the Cowboys. I mean, he blocked for Tony Romo. He played under Jason Garrett. You know, things like that. And there's been a lot of talk and a lot of discussion, a lot of murmurs that he was kind of the guy that the players wanted, you know, to be their coach. Is that something that you can see as a former player, as somebody who's been there, that maybe, you know, maybe they relate to Mark more? I don't know. I mean, I'm just trying to connect those dots.
I think that's a great point, because, you know, during the course of my career, different voices send different messages and teach different, you know, I guess technique and philosophy. And I think if you're a player, former player, you've been around, let's say he's been within the organization, you know, in the shadows and learning, just kind of going through, you know, trying to learn the ins and outs of being a coach until he's catapulted into he's the guy.
Right.
And I think guys see someone like him as played, very passionate, very polarizing figure. When you meet him, he's a big guy, great personality. And I think that resonates with a lot of guys. You bring someone in the first year and all of a sudden he wants to change everything. We're talking about, you know, veterans, guys that are Pro Bowlers, guys that have been there. You know, and maybe the young players, those are the guys that will listen. The Connor Williams, those type of guys that come in. I mean, as a player, you're going to listen to what your coach has to say.
Sure.
But you see right through that. You see through, maybe it's not the lack of respect, but it's like, you know, that's I've developed my craft. I know I'm a veteran. Why do you want me to change that much? You're going to teach me this. I can't change that. So I think the philosophy's got to be where it fits everyone in the room, not just the young player, not just a veteran player. It's got to be collectively, because they got to build the continuity of an offensive line. That's one thing that's different about the defensive line. I think I heard someone talking about an offensive line coach. It's not really, you have like a kind of a weak link in the wall. And we'll use Travis Frederick as an example. And you got to figure out ways that you can build a continuity where you can kind of, get through that. Mm-hmm. And the philosophy and the teaching part of it has to be more accepted by those guys. And if it's not, then I think all of a sudden now you can't justify firing the offensive line coach for the bad play of maybe Tyrone Smith this year. I think we can all agree he hasn't had the best year.
Right.
Zach Martin, you can throw him in there. But overall, Lyle Collins, I don't know if he fits that right side as a tackle, if he fits better inside. Connor Williams is a better he's better now than he was when he first started. But to be able to develop these guys, you want a guy that everyone believes in the philosophy and wants to learn, and not just, okay, well, here's the thing about it. The other guys in the room sense that, especially younger players, a veteran player is not going to buy into what the coach is saying. So it's not a lack of respect. It's just that maybe it gets interpreted as that. And that doesn't work.
Yeah, that makes sense. And yeah, I'm glad you kind of crystallized that thought. Have you, I know, we talk shows and stuff all the time. You've seen The Office, am I right? This kind of, to me, to equate it to The Office, kind of feels like when Michael left. So Michael leaves and The Office needs a new boss. And then they brought in D'Angelo Vickers, who Will Fuller, the Houston Texans receiver on IR. Will Ferrell, man, those names are really close.
Yeah,
Will Ferrell comes in, he's kind of the new boss, and he's kind of changing things up. And the whole office is kind of like, whoa, 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 we don't do things like that. And he's like, well, I don't care, I'm the new boss. I'm not saying that's what Paul Alexander did, but I mean, you go in anywhere, you're a new boss, you do things your way. And so then the whole kind of crew, the whole office kind of sort of assimilates to a point where it's like, well, we kind of want one of our own guys, somebody who's kind of been in the shadows, kind of like Mark Colombo. That makes sense that, and again, I'm not saying this is necessarily true, but
right.
Mark Colombo might not necessarily be as qualified as Paul Alexander from a resume standpoint, but he might just be a better fit for this group because he's been there. He knows them. He's played offensive line for this team. I think there's like an innate trust there that people have with him. So I can totally see that, when the boss is gone and a new boss is necessary, how you kind of want sort of the vice principal, so to speak, to kind of ascend, because that's the culture you already know.
Well, the problem is with that, if you're the new boss, you come in, you want to make changes, and those changes make you worse, or you're not performing, your performance changes your performance.
Yeah.
Exactly. And I think that's the same thing. The analogy with Paul Alexander, he went in there, he wanted to change the whole philosophy of how they were blocking and technique wise, and it wasn't working. And based on what we've seen over 7 weeks, I mean, Zeke's, he's not the, although he's rushed for 600 yards. I mean, he's not on the pace that he was, say, 2 years ago, a year ago.
Yeah.
The offensive line is not blocking as well. They're giving up more sacks. And if he's trying to make these changes, that's not working. So I think maybe not a scapegoat, but they're thinking, well, look, offensive line is our strongest part of our team the last 2 years. Yeah, we lost Travis Frederick, but why are we on a decline? Is it because you're trying to teach us different philosophy? Well, I don't think we need to go with the new boss. Let's go back and revert to what we used to do. And Mark Colombo was part of what we used to do.
So Mark Colombo in this case is Andy Bernard. And
exactly.
And Paul Alexander is D'Angelo Vickers. You can have worse days than being compared to Will Ferrell. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's exactly.
But so the other point I wanted to hit on with you is you mentioned Hudson Houck. Obviously, his ties with the Cowboys go way back. And I think every Cowboys fan that's listening and that reads Blog of the Boys certainly knows of his history and has a general idea of what he brings. And everybody knows, this is a guy that just, he's going to help. But what is it about him? I mean, what can you tell us as somebody who knows better than anybody?
I think it's just knowledge. I think that I think maybe he's a little bit innovative as far as, I mean, he's an older man, obviously, coach, and he's seen a lot. But I think he understands all the nuances and just the fundamentals. You know, the thing about it, even if you go in the NFL and even been in the National Football League for some time, you get into this phase where it's not all about the physicality of it. Now I need to really just hone in on the technique and so I can sustain and make my job a lot easier. And sometimes we get into that, I would say, that rut. Mm-hmm. And I think that what Hudson is able to do, I mean, you look at some of he coached the Great Wall. He was part of the 90s. He's been to other places where he's coached, and I think he's become more a consultant where he can see guys fundamentally. Because I think that's the problem with any position, especially the offensive line, is that fundamentally if you start not paying attention to the small details, mm-hmm. it starts to catch up. And I think Hudson Hawk, although they want to make Mark Colombo the main offensive line coach, I think it's a good, how they can mirror each other. So he can watch film with him and kind of develop him into the offensive line coach that he wants to become. Maybe they're confident that he can handle that, but not, have two sets of eyes and have him look and evaluate. And especially some of the younger players, and especially where maybe they're missing someone part of that wall where they need to really replace with kind of a smarter version and more of this complex way of looking at it to build the continuity. I think that's where Hudson, he brings you experience. He brings you the technique aspect of it. And I think you've seen a lot of really young players develop, and the players that are developing, the guys that he brought along in his career.
I thought there was a really interesting tweet, because this is great insight, from another former Sooner turned Cowboy in DeMarco Murray. He had a tweet when the news was announced, and he said, "One of the very best teachers and men taught me so much my first 2 years related to pass protection and understanding of run scheme. He'll be great once again." It kind of sounds like that's what you're saying. I mean, he's just this incredibly bright individual. So to kind of tie a pretty little bow on this Office analogy, The Office, by the way, had so many great Halloween episodes. If Mark Colombo is Andy Bernard, that he's now in charge of The Office, so to speak, it sounds like Hudson Hauk is like Robert California, like this super wise, super cool, just, point of confidence for Mark to sort of draw from.
He's kind of the wizard, I think that they can bounce ideas back. And again, Jerry and Jason, they have familiarity with him. They know Hudson Hauk. They know his capacity. Again, he's along the age where he does. He's got to be in his mid 70s. He's in great health. But I think any offensive line coach has seen so many different types of offensive linemen over these years. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's really the naked eye that he can see. And I think that both those two guys collaborating will be able to see what maybe has been breaking down. Again, if you're trying to teach guys technique that they're this foreign to them, and you're trying to, what they say, teach an old dog new tricks. Mm-hmm. There's only so much you can teach an old dog certain tricks.
Right.
And I think the common denominator, IJ, is them to get back to where they're communicating, where they're trying to do things. And to me, certainly over 7 games. Paul Alexander was not sending that message loud and clear.
Yeah, I think that's well said. I do think that, Hudson knows Tyron Smith. If you want to get back, you need to get back to what you know. Mark Colombo's certainly somebody you know. Hudson Hauk's certainly somebody you know. I'm curious, and maybe this isn't necessarily a football question, maybe just sort of like a general, workplace question. Do you think that maybe the Cowboys couldn't bring Hudson Hauk back to serve as this sort of like offensive assistant wizard, as you say, if Paul Alexander's the offensive line coach? Because Paul has his own – he's a storied NFL coach. He has his own –
Yeah, he's been around, for 30 years.
Yeah, so, do you think that it is something, okay, we want to bring Hudson back, but there's no way he can work with Paul because, partly out of respect to Paul, he has his own career, et cetera. But if we bring in Hudson and we pair him with Mark Colombo, he's certainly new. He understands. He knows Hudson. The whole overall environment we're creating here is just a better one, and that's why Paul had to go.
Yeah, I don't think Hudson Hauk would be looking over Paul Alexander's shoulder, a guy that's been in the league 30 years.
Yeah,
I don't think that those two guys would coexist. It probably, I mean, I don't think that he'd want to operate under those terms.
Right.
I mean, you're underlining his, you know, what his, you know, philosophy is. No, it wouldn't work. I think that that was the right decision to make. I was really surprised. I mean, the Cowboys made a change, and you know, I think we all talk about, you know, Scott Linehan, the play caller. But again, if you start where the breakdown has been, it's been on the offensive line, because that's all we ever talk about, how great this offensive line is. You know, they lose one player, you know, guess what? It's the next man up, the cliche. Mm-hmm. You know, what's that next man going to do? Well, you know, if it's technical aspects of it, and you watch film and you guys are, you know, blocking different than they did last year, that's going to show up on the film. And that's exactly what you watch. You watch film, you're like, from last year to this year.
Yeah.
The different coaches, the message and how they act. I mean, you can tell, I mean, people are different. And I don't know Paul Alexander from Adam, but it seems to me that, you know, a lot of the players were kind of disgruntled. And I'm, you know, some of the older players, like, you know, maybe the Tyrone Smiths, the Zach Martins, I don't know, Travis Frederick, some of these guys maybe pointed out, and I'm sure they took notice of that.
It makes sense. I mean, I don't know that the Cowboys offensive line was playing to the elite level we know them to be last season, but they were certainly very good. And I mean, you look at it, you're right. These seven games, they haven't been that good. And what, you know, if you ask yourself out loud when you're thinking what changed, well, part of what changed is Paul Alexander. But I do think that Scott Linehan has to be held responsible as well. I totally agree with that. I do think, looking at this from an objective perspective, I do think Scott Linehan is safe. And I think Scott Linehan, and I'm, let me be clear, and I think I speak for you here, we're not wishing ill will on Scott Linehan.
No, we don't want anyone fired by any means.
But I, you
know. Who wants someone to get fired?
Right.
I mean, I don't think anyone, and we've all been fired. I mean, it's not, we don't want people to lose their jobs, but it's our job to be objective and opinionated. And I think it's everyone else's voice that has made the observation of the lack of enthusiasm on this offensive team this year.
Right. And if you are hoping for a change in terms of offensive play caller, I don't think that's coming this season, because they just traded for Amari Cooper, who's worked in different Scott Linehan schemes, different schemes that Scott Linehan has, you know, helped influence in terms of the coaches that Amari Cooper has played for. They've worked with and under Scott Linehan before in different places. So for that reason, I really believe that Scott Linehan has to be safe. My point is, they went and got a toy that, you know, was designed by a person that Scott Linehan helped tutor. You know what I mean? And so I don't know if something goes south. I don't know that the Cowboys want to move on from Scott Linehan, because they might say, look, what we're running, Amari knows well, and Scott's the guy running it. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it makes sense. But I think we all have to be – just think about this. Think about right now, the Cowboys are making all the moves and decisions so they can accommodate one player, and that's Dak Prescott.
That's right.
And if we see everything, as you mentioned, the toys – if we see all those parts and those toys come together and they're all, you know, being wound up and have this different, you know, different role, then that's when we're going to sit back and, okay, well, here's what we did. We got it. We fired the offensive line coach. You know, we don't have one of our better players. We'll say that, but hey, that happens all the time in the National Football League,
totally,
right?
Totally.
How many teams that have gone on? Look at last year with the Eagles.
Yeah, they lost.
And they had one of the best, Jason Peter, the best offensive line. And look what they did.
Yeah.
So I don't want to hear all these damn excuses about, you know, where one guy's got, look, it happens. You know, that's what happens in the culture of the National Football League. But back to Dak Prescott. Okay, we're providing him with a viable number one receiver, finding a better coach to make this offensive line better. Now, okay, and Scott Linehan, yeah, he's taking the heat for some lack of play calling. But now, Dak, we got to see what you can do when you got all these toys together, when you got everything in place. Now we got to see what's your future, what lies ahead of you.
It's funny that, you know, we're talking about them as toys, because I think it was the NFL Twitter account tweeted a photo this morning, and it was a bunch of different players, you know, sort of like in cartoon Halloween characters or Halloween costumes. and they had Dak Prescott dressed up as Woody from Toy Story. So it's appropriate that we're talking about them as toys. But I agree with you. I mean, the Amari Cooper trade alone is enough, just sort of, it's like a neon sign going off. We're doing everything we can to help Dak Prescott. And I think that, you know, we're sort of seeing the Cowboys live in this post-Romo world. I think they learned a lot, or hopefully learned a lot, in the Tony Romo era. And they learned that they didn't help Tony Romo all that much. They left Tony Romo on an island. They took him for granted. They thought, oh,
yeah, they didn't appreciate him enough, maybe. Yeah, or the fans didn't appreciate him enough.
Totally. And, you know, and the Cowboys thought, he'll just do it. He'll take care of it. We'll be fine, et cetera. Didn't give him enough help. And so I don't want to say they're overcorrecting, but now they're at a place of, okay, well, you know, we've got Dak, a number one running back. Awesome. We've got this offensive line. We've got to fix it, though, because Dak needs it. Dak also, what does he need? He needs a number one receiver. And it's just, I mean, it's like, you're right. It all does. And to be fair, in the NFL, in the game of football, it should. It should all revolve around the most important position in the game. But theoretically, you have somebody who's playing very well at that position. Because, you know, my point is, if Drew Brees says, I want something, and I run the New Orleans Saints, guess what, Drew? You can have it, dude. You yeah, want it. I mean, you know,
Drew Brees is probably, the top five, top 10 players of quarterbacks has ever played.
Yeah. So
in the National Football League, yeah, you're probably going to get what he –
yeah,
what he needs.
If I ran the Saints and Drew Brees told me, dude, I really like chicken parmesan, we would have chicken parmesan every day in the cafeteria. That's all I'm saying. And so I made this case 2 years ago when the Cowboys moved on from Mark Sanchez. Dak Prescott had said, hey, I really like Mark.
Oh, gosh, Mark Sanchez.
Yeah, but Dak really got along with him, really worked well with him. And if I ran the Cowboys and Dak was my superstar and Dak liked Mark Sanchez, then guess what? I like Mark Sanchez. And so you got to have Mark Sanchez in that case. And so the Cowboys didn't do that. We know all that. So now I think the Cowboys, I'm not at all saying that they've sat Dak down and said, what do you want? You want Amari Cooper, whatever. But it does seem like they are definitely, to your point, constructing an environment that really helps him and can really help him shine because they really need him to.
Well, by their own admission, they're admitting that they should have drafted a wide receiver last year in the first round. And I think Van Der Esch, I think he's a tremendous player, but they needed a number one receiver, so they didn't get one. And also, by their own admission, I think that they're admitting that they shouldn't have ever fired, or they should have promoted Mark Colombo as their offensive line coach if they thought that, and maybe they didn't know this. I mean, when you look at a coach who's been in a National Football League for 30 years, look, I mean, you got a pretty good shot of picking up a really good coach. But I think the first one sticks out more than anything. They didn't go out and get a wide receiver, which they thought they should have, which they thought maybe they would get in, and maybe Michael Gallup will develop into a fine player. But I'm talking about a player that you come in right now and make a huge impact. But I mean, I think that those are the things that they realize what they needed to do. And, you know, right now you can have the right players, but ultimately And I think as I watch Dak play more, and I don't want to just bash Dak. Maybe it's just I think maybe things are a little bit more unclear for me that some of the decisions he's made and some of the passes he should have executed and made, just haven't seen enough of that, regardless if you don't have an Amari Cooper or regardless you don't have the best offensive line playing for you. I just don't think he's been consistent enough.
You know, I mean, we started this whole thing, and then we, you know, I don't know that it's a Halloween movie, but Alice in Wonderland kind of feels like a Halloween movie. We started this whole thing talking about, like, Halloween spooky fears and whatnot, and we really went down this rabbit hole of Alice in Wonderland, and now I'm kind of back at a fearful place because I think that's the fear. Because I'm definitely – I think I agree with you. You know, you're afraid that Amari Cooper is not going to be this guy. You're definitely scared that the offensive line isn't going to just snap back into place. But the number one fear, we're at the part of the movie where we're screaming at the character, like, what are you doing? Why, you're going to go check the electrical box now? It's dark outside. Nobody, you're going to go by yourself. And that's where we're at with this Dak Prescott thing. If Dak is not the guy, that is the most terrifying reality possible, because then you're not even in purgatory. You don't even exist. If you don't have a quarterback, and the fact that, you know, and the Tony Romo thing gets just beat into the ground, but the fact that you moved on from somebody and you chose Dak and all this, I mean, it would be just this unending sort of black eye on the franchise if it didn't work out. That's why it's so terrifying.
Well, I went to the house, and as I told you earlier before we started our podcast, I went to watch, saw Halloween 2 last night. And I'm like, you always think when you're watching a scary movie like that, and Michael Myers is looming outside with that just over the top, ugly or spooky mask. Why the hell do you want to walk outside and look, find out, look where he's at, or go upstairs in the room where you know he's going to be there, and he's going to butcher you.
Yeah, you sit.
So it's the same thing.
You sit in one room and you stare at the door. That's all you do.
Inevitably, they're going to. But that's part of being in a movie, which makes it so the greatness of it. But you know, again, I mean, we all want Dak Prescott to be able to be the quarterback. And, you know, here we are, they're 3-4, they're playing the Tennessee Titans this week. Both the teams are 3-4, by the way. Mm-hmm. And so all of a sudden, you hope after the bye week that there'll be this 180, this turnaround. And you're just hoping that they're able to turn things around, because I think we all know that this sets up good for them, especially when you're coming off a bye week. I mean, you're at home. The Cowboys went at home. They're playing Tennessee. It tees up perfectly for them. 4-4, bam. And then you start this trend. Then you really find out. And maybe it'll take a couple of weeks to get, Amari Cooper acclimated and everything else. But, yeah, I think that's the only thing that we hope for, is that they have enough firepower and they have the guy that can make those throws and really be – the person that makes what we talk about all the time after a game, two or three of those plays that could be the plays that could win or lose the game for you.
Yeah, so let's kind of live in this Michael Myers world. I haven't seen the movie yet myself, but, you've convinced me that it's necessary. But so the Cowboys are at a point where, they know he's coming, and they have a choice on where they can go. And I've always said before, like if a zombie apocalypse happened, you know where I'd go, Tony? I would go to Costco. I would go to Costco and I would lock every door, and I could survive for like 6 months in Costco. You know what I mean? And so the Cowboys have gone to Costco because they have surrounded themselves with everything you could possibly need. You've got a number one receiver. You've got Ezekiel Elliott. You conceivably have a fixed offensive line. You have a ball in defense. So Dak, guess what, bro? He's coming, all right? And you're in the best situation you could possibly be right now. And if you don't get it done, it wasn't for, lack of help around you. I think that there's reason to believe that Dak can do it. We've seen him do it before. The Tennessee Titans are a good team to try to get your first shot off against it. But you're right. I mean, after this game, it is tough cookies. I mean, it is. You got the Eagles, you got the Falcons, you got the Redskins and the Saints. And this Eagles game, and I don't mean to look ahead and look past the Titans, but the Eagles are on a bye. So they get the whole bye to get ready for the Cowboys. And then they get the Cowboys on Sunday Night Football. I've mentioned this a lot of times when we've talked. Their Super Bowl banner hanging up in the air. They got a brand new receiver that they traded for in Golden Tate. They're going to be feeling just all sorts of confidence and, energy. And so if you drop this game, I mean, Sunday looks grim already. But if you drop this game against the Titans and you're 3-5, then man, I don't think that Paul Alexander is the only name we'll see the Cowboys moving on from.
Yeah, I think that the best case scenario is if they, and we had talked about Instagram Live, the best case scenario for this team is to really, really just embrace what they have. And really, it looks over the first seven games, RJ, it looks like they haven't really played with a lot of confidence. They don't have that swagger. I think that there's a lot of people, including themselves, little self-doubt, lack of confidence, and maybe this is what they need. They need someone else in the room that has a little swagger. I always thought different players that come from different organizations, they bring in this type of aura and maybe add something to them. And, here I go talking about players they had on the team last year. As much as you want to talk about Dez Bryant, I mean, he did have the fuel and the passion. He may have been kind of a knucklehead and maybe a distraction, but there was that leadership. And, you lose Jason Witten. People don't talk about – they always talk about the greatness of different players. They really don't talk about the leadership that you have in that room. And I'm not so sure that that's what they're lacking on that side. There really hasn't been someone that you say to look on that team and like, who's a leader? Is it Dak?
Let's explore this for a second. As somebody who's been there, what does a Dez Bryant or a Jason Witten do? And I'm talking the things that nobody sees, you know, because everybody sees the rah-rah speeches in the middle of the huddle and things like that. But where are the points that, you know, you see them and you say, man, you know, that's our guy. That's, you know, we'll go to bat for him.
Well, even the Tony Romo, when he retired, that you lost the just the fact that his face, that there was there's an elephant in the room. When I say that, whenever you have guys, I use Troy Aikman for example. You know, Troy was a tremendous leader. He may not have said a whole lot, but you just know. The best example I can use is on Fridays when we did our walkthrough and just kind of simulated. It wasn't a walkthrough, but it was a light day. But the best part of the practice was the 2 minute. We did a 2 minute and everything had to be precise. If not, you know, Troy would be the first person to shout out an F-bomb because he was frustrated because they weren't executing. Those type of players like the Jason Wittens or even the Romos or even Dez were, you know, it was exciting where you just knew that people were around, that you had to look over. And Jason Witten made you, just because he was there for 15 years, accountable. There's expectation how you carry yourself and execute. Mm-hmm. And not to say that Dak Prescott doesn't have that leadership role 7 games in the season or after 2 years of him being a quarterback. He probably does. But, you know, with that, you have to have success. You have to execute the throws. You have to be – I think you have to earn that. And, you know – earning that, yes. I mean, the quarterback is a leader. He's in the and he by all means, he has that aura about it. But for me, someone that's been like a staple, like a Jason Witten or even Dez, you know, there's this energy. There's this part of energy that it's hard to replace when you have this changeover. And maybe that's the point where maybe that people don't understand that, but it lives really, really, really loud.
I think the guy that we're seeing develop into that role is DeMarcus Lawrence. And you're right, because I think you have to walk the walk if you're going to talk the leadership talk. You know, I mean, because I get what you're saying. You know, if I'm not saying Dak Prescott, but if the quarterback who's throwing 5 picks a game is out here, you know, getting on your ass, you know, in practice, you're thinking, dude, come on, give me a break. You know what I mean? But if it's somebody who's showing up week in, week out, then, you know, you're right. I mean, you start listening. DeMarcus has really become that guy. I think he's at the right place for this leadership role in terms of his age, his experience, his resume.
Yeah, as I say, look how he's playing. Mm-hmm. So with the way you play and the way you lead yourself, people respect that. I mean, they're not you're a rah-rah guy and you're not out there balling. Hey, that only goes so far. That doesn't really create that much respect with your teammates. But if you're out there balling like DeMarcus Lawrence, but I think you have to have it on both sides of the ball. And I think offensively and as a team, it's got to come from your number one leader.
Right.
And that's your franchise quarterback.
So obviously we need more from Dak, but maybe he's not the leader. He's obviously not Dez Bryant, but Amari Cooper, I think, can be that injection of, I don't know if it's leadership, but like, I don't know if it's confidence. Maybe it's some sort of intimidation. What it feels like to me is like, you know, when you're going to go out, right? You're going to the club, or you're going to the bar, wherever you're going, you're ready and you're wearing your new shirt, you know, and you're wearing the new shirt.
Looking in the mirror, man, I look great. Yeah. Man, look at me. And I may be the only one that thinks I look great, but hey, I feel good.
But you know what? If you think you look great, then you feel great. You know what I mean? And your night is influenced by that confidence. And so Amari kind of feels like that. Like if I'm in that huddle, and I don't mean this as a slight to them by any means, but if I'm in that huddle and I look over, I'm an offensive lineman, I'm Jeff Swaim, I'm whoever, and it's Deontay Thompson and Tavon Austin, I'm thinking, dude, these are the clothes, you know, that – you know, I've had for 6 years, you know, like everyone has seen me in these clothes. I don't look sharp, but if I'm putting on the Amari t-shirt, I'm doing my hair. I'm shining my shoes a bit.
Dude, I got to shop like a first rounder, baby.
Yeah. You know, what I'm saying?
Even if I don't have the salary, I'm going to go and I'm going to get that custom made suit by Lombardo or somewhere.
That's what I'm saying. Like, it's like when you walk into the bar or whatever, when you're wearing what we're talking about, like you can, it's like you walk through like a force field. You can feel it, you know, like you walk into the bars, the air condition's all up and you feel good and you walk up with confidence. And I think Amari can be that. And I think that, You're right. Dak has to be the leader. But I think some of the energy that we're talking about can be driven out of what just Amari's presence brings, because he is this new shirt, new jacket, whatever you want to call him.
Yeah, I think so. I think that you want to dress good. You want to perform well. I always thought, hey, look, you dress well, you perform well. I mean, sometimes, you know that's kind of the swagger you want. But I've seen this before. I've seen different players come from different organizations. And I think that he just has he's got a good head on his shoulders. Mm-hmm. By everything I've heard, it seems to me that he's this level-headed kid. He's 24 years old. And I always think if you go to a different place, I mean, it re-energizes you. It gives you an opportunity. I think it's great for him, because you look what's going on in Oakland right now. Mm-hmm. I mean, he probably couldn't wait to get out.
Yeah.
Considering what's going on there. And maybe he thinks that, hey, look, who doesn't, you know, we had Jerry Jones calling, hey, right, welcome to Dallas. We have this America team. We got to get some Super Bowl rings. That resonates. That builds this energy. And I'm sure that the conversations they had with him, it's like, we're bringing you here. I mean, there's a reason why. They trade a number one, that first round pick for you. You're pretty important. They don't do that too often. So I think he's level-headed enough. I think that the guys that obviously the existing players on the team now respect him, because look what they're giving up for him. And the most important thing that I really think is going to work is that those players on that offensive team think that he's going to make them a better offensive unit. And that's the most important, most confident thing you can have in a new player coming in with a different franchise.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's very well said. As long as they think it, as you know what I mean? I've said this before. I don't know if you agree with it. If you can convince 53 dudes to believe anything, if you can convince 53 guys that the sky is orange, then guess what? The sky is orange. You know, because as long as that whole room believes it, and to your point, if they all believe, guess what, man? We're better. We're back. You know, I mean, if all of this is just, you know, sort of swimming in a cauldron, to stay on Halloween theme, I mean, it feels like it's something that can only bode well for the Cowboys. And I know that we're looking at this through an incredibly glass half full approach, but it does feel like, and I think there's something to, like, you know, feeling antsy because they've been on a bye. You know, it's, you know, man, let's get out there. Let's go hit some people. Let's go just rock this thing out, because we've been waiting a long time. And so, you know, I think all of these changes, because it's been a few, you know, an 8 or 9.
It's been a long 2 weeks, especially when you come off a loss. You cannot wait. The worst thing about a bye week, going to bye week, is having to taste that loss.
And, you know, the Redskins are leading the division. And, you know, before the Cowboys play again on Monday, they'll have seen the Redskins, you know, play twice, because they played obviously last week and they'll play this week. So, I mean, that's, I feel like that makes you feel so much further behind, you know, when, you know, you feel like, man, we're not playing.
You're ready to play. You're ready to, like, look, let's move on. It's Monday night. But I mean, it's a long 2 weeks, essentially, unless you're Jason Garrett, you're out watching the Dodgers, well, by the way, lost 2 years in a row in the World Series.
Let's touch on this. we hadn't hit on this yet. It's been a very, very busy few days, obviously, and we're you know, packaging everything in one neat 750 box. What's your take on, and if somehow you're listening and you missed it, Jason Garrett was at Game 3 of the World Series, the one that went to 18 innings, sitting next to Brad Paisley, of all people, and I don't think it was really that big of a deal in terms of, like, reaction, until Jimmy Johnson said something. On Sunday morning on Fox, Jimmy, you know, your coach certainly, talked about how he didn't think it was a good look. He said at 3-4, there's work to be done. And then it came out that the Cowboys brought back Hudson Houck, who lives in the L.A. area, so it was conceivable that's why Garrett was out there. All of that considered, Tony, what's your take here?
Well, the problem is when Jimmy coached the Cowboys, 94 was his last year. So if I do my math, that was 20. How many years ago was that?
So his last year was, what, 90, when y'all won the second Super Bowl, 93.
Yeah, 93. And,
so that was 25 years ago.
25 years ago. A lot of things have changed, Coach. First of all, they don't have social media. They don't have, you know, the electronic media instantly when you're somewhere. So I can only imagine what Jimmy was doing in his bye week. And I thought it was great. I understand that. I think there's a lot, but not too many coaches were like Jimmy Johnson. Jimmy Johnson, his life was football, and there's examples of that. I mean, he wanted you to think football 24/7 and not worry about your family or anything else that were going on there. So, yeah, it's just the way it was. Mm-hmm. But I understand the perspective. And I think everyone needs to go enjoy their bye week.
You talked about
how you
had a thumb issue that you basically risked your thumb to enjoy your bye week.
Well, yeah, and look, I want to enjoy it. I didn't want to go back and spend time with and look, I played with Atlanta Falcons. I think we won 4 games my 5 years I was there. Now, I'm exaggerating. Right. We didn't win a whole lot. But I wanted, as a player, I wanted to get away from it. I didn't want to go back and, you know, I had plans to do things. Regardless, I just wanted to enjoy it. But as a coach, again, I think it was kind of blown out of proportion. Again, it's a difference. 20-something years later, you know, they have social media. Everyone knows about it. Mm-hmm. He's smiling, having a good time. Well, you know what? When you're away from the game, I think you need that. You need to get away from it because it is a grind. We all grind in our jobs.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, when you're the coach for the Cowboys, you're going to get more scrutinized. The whole clapping, the memes of everything. I thought it was funny. I even put one of mine out there, and I captioned. Jason's a friend of mine, and the caption was he's talking to Brad Paisley, and he's basically saying, "Damn, I'm sure glad it was the offensive line coach getting fired and not my ass."
Yeah. I mean,
but it was fun. But really, RJ, I had no problem with it.
Yeah, I mean, live your
get
life.
Get away, dude, and enjoy it. You got a long season. You know, now with the collective bargaining agreement, again, things have changed 20-something
years
ago.
Yeah, too.
Guys leave. I mean, they can't. They can only get so much time with the players.
Exactly. That's a great point. And, you know, it's not like he could have been working with somebody or whoever or whatever. I mean, you're right. I mean, there are rules that prohibit that. And, you know, for the people that say, I mean, well, he should have been watching film. Or whatever. I mean, for all you know, I mean, I agree with you.
This guy got an iPad right there next to him. He can watch film. I mean, you couldn't do that 25 years ago.
That's what I'm saying.
You can watch film on your phone and your iPad 24/7. Take it home with you.
For all we know, that's what he did. He chatted up Brad Paisley, stayed up till midnight Pacific watching the game, and then went home and crushed some film. I think it's fascinating what you're saying. I mean, we're in a different era, you know. And I wonder, you know, I wonder if that happens. I'm just curious if, you know, Joe Buck isn't on the call. You know, because Joe Buck has these NFL ties. You know, I mean, like
people hate them. Buck.
I love Joe Buck. I've read his book. I interviewed.
But him. I mean, you know, there's all these people that they just dislike Joe Buck, and just like people don't like Jason Garrett.
It's you know, you said Jason Garrett's a friend of yours. Could you have seen Jason Garrett back in the day going to the World Series?
Back in the day,
yeah.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely.
That's just who he is then. Yeah.
Yeah, you know what? I had no problem with that. I mean, that's the thing about it is that people have to separate their professional life from their personal life. And again, if you have time to go out and watch the World Series, I don't think, you know, Jason doesn't – I think he honestly loves baseball. I mean, he probably wanted to go watch – he may be a Dodgers fan, obviously. I don't know. But given the opportunity, I just don't think that – you know, and again, if they end up losing, oh my God, if they end up losing to Tennessee, though, that's all we're going to hear.
Yeah.
Oh, Jason Garrett should have been, he was out in L.A. having a good time. I can hear it now. It's the worst thing that he wants to happen is to get beat by the Tennessee Titans. We will never hear the end of that.
It feels like, I don't know if you'll get this reference, Tony, but somebody listening might, in the second Mighty Ducks movie, Emilio Estevez was obviously the coach. And in the second movie, he's coaching Team USA. And so it's like real corporate, you know, that the whole team, their success has gotten real corporate. And he's off doing all these commercial shoots and everything because he's the coach of Team USA. And all the players are, hey, coach, what's going on, man? You know, we got to – and then they go and they get roundhoused by the Russian team. And everybody's giving him flack like, dude, you were off shooting your commercials and blah, blah. You weren't here working. That's what it is right now. I mean, that's all I'm saying. You know, Jason Garrett is Emilio Estevez. That's what I learned today.
Yeah, well, again, it'd be interesting to see what Jimmy Johnson, what kind of coach he would be 25 years, or if he was younger and it would be 25 years later. because I some of the decisions, I think we'd all make had to make different decisions, including myself, not living in the era of smartphones and social media, Twitter, Instagram, everything else. You got to cater to the times.
It was really interesting. Absurd the levels it reached, hypothetically, what if the Rangers had been in the World Series, right? And he had gone and watched it in Arlington, it would have been the same exact thing, but nobody would have been upset. You know what I mean?
Well, because it's in Arlington and it's the Rangers, and you didn't have to go all the way to LA. What is it? You can fly. You can do a red eye, right? You can go there and back in 2 days. It's not like you're spending a week. And I don't know what the schedule was. I have to go back and look what the schedule was for the players. But again, it's not like, you can only, back in my day, you only got 2 days off. And now I think they, during the collective bargaining agreement, they, get them almost like 4 or 5 days off for their bye week, which is tremendous.
Yeah. I mean, it was funny. It just added to the weirdness. What a bye week. You got Amari Cooper, Jason Garrett at the longest game ever. That's the other thing. He literally was at the longest game ever in World Series history. So, it's just funny.
I would have had to laugh. I don't know if I could sit as much as I love going to the World Series. I don't know about you, but I love baseball. And I had a hard time falling. That was my birthday night. That was my excuse. I told my wife, I was watching the baseball game. It was 7.5 hours long. Imagine sitting there watching a baseball game. You only score, 3 innings total in the game? Crazy.
So you went to bed on your birthday, or you stayed out for the whole thing?
Yeah.
Respect. It was your birthday.
Wife hopes she won't listen to this version of the 750. I told her that, but my wife's been married to me been together for 24 years. But I wouldn't have made it up anyway, because – what time the game end? 2:30 Central Time?
Oh yeah, dude. So it was your birthday night, and it was Friday night. So I had a high school game that I called, I called my dad afterwards, because when we left the stadium, it was the bottom of the eighth, and so I was having him kind of tell me what was happening while I was driving home, and I picked up some canes. Sometimes Friday night snack is good. And I got home, and he told me, I hung up, and he said, it's the bottom of the ninth. There's two outs. It just went to a commercial. I was like, oh, sweet. And he said it was tied. So I was like, I'll catch the extra inning. It'll be awesome. And I sat down on the couch with my canes, and I watched the entire second half. Yeah,
that's awesome. If I was at home, probably, but not when I'm celebrating my birthday.
You had an excuse. You're good.
But I would hate if I was Jason Garrett. If you're right there, he looked like he was right there on the front row behind the. I don't know where his seats were, but they were good. Great seats.
They were seats that the Dallas Cowboys head coach gets.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So there you go. I guess it's kind of like going somewhere and you don't want to get up and go to the bathroom because you don't want to be that guy as you get older. I'd be like, hey, look, if I'm gonna sit here, right here, where the camera's on me, and I'm sitting next to Brad Paisley, I'm gonna have to stay for 7.5 hours.
Yeah, I would have stayed.
That's
as long
good
as
and a bad.
If Brad had left, I would have considered leaving. But
it didn't look like that many people left, though, right?
No, and what a game! It was sick.
It was a tremendous series.
You mentioned just to tie a bow on all this. You mentioned Twitter. Twitter makes things like that so much cooler because, the whole time the game's going on, you're on Twitter and everybody's making jokes about being tired and whatever. And I'll remember that forever. I'll remember just kind of how crazy I think Twitter, I remember a couple years ago when the Oscar for the best movie got handed out to the wrong movie. Twitter was amazing that night. So,
that was the worst gaffe in history. We know Oscar history, but I remember that vividly.
Yeah. But who knows? So final question.
Was LA, was it La La Land that won, end up winning it, or was it?
Yeah, I think they announced that La La Land won, and that was incorrect, and I think it was Moonlight that was the actual winner.
And that was who was that? Was that, I'm trying to think of that.
What was it? Casey whatever the show, I don't remember, but but yeah, I mean, either way.
Warren Beatty, and I'm trying to think of the actress's name that made the mistake. But anyway, it was I felt so bad. But yeah, it'd be something like that. But yeah. 7 hours, and then also, as we just, I guess if we talk about baseball.
It was Faye Dunaway, by the way.
Faye Dunaway, thank you. Which is a brilliant actress, but yeah, that was, wow. How would you like to be, the problem was that, is that the person, La La Land, I said, oh, they're, you won the best Oscar, you know, the Oscar for the best movie, and you got to take it back.
Oh, dude,
give it back. Think about that.
I liked really, La La Land.
Right there in my hand.
I liked
and
La La
taking,
Land a lot.
You're taking the Vince Lombardi Trophy out of my hand.
It's wow. But well, whatever. This was a great episode. We touched on it all. We touched on all the bases. Jason Garrett was probably watching this baseball game. Last thing before we get out of here, Tony, we'll be back tomorrow on the 750. We'll be on Instagram Live again later this week as well. So with it being Halloween, we talked about candies and whatnot. You know, what are you looking forward to on the rest of Halloween? What's maybe something y'all do, maybe a family tradition, something you're just looking forward to on Halloween?
Well, we always do this. We always go to the pumpkin patch, which is, you know, where I live. It's kind of got that traditional pumpkin patch. Mm-hmm. And we've been taking our kids, excuse me, my son's 24. We've been taking our kids for the last, the twins are 18. So we've been taking them for the last 19, 20 years. And we tried to go out there over the weekend, but it was just, I think everyone in this part of the Metroplex decided they were going to go on Sunday.
It was like taking pictures with Santa.
So we always took the pictures out there with our kids, and they had this measuring, you know, stick, and it shows how old our kids were, and we just progressively did it through the years. We didn't do that, but we found a place to go take a picture of all, you know, with us all with pumpkins. So that's kind of a traditional thing. The thing that we didn't do is we didn't carve a pumpkin yet. So I'm thinking I'm going to have to go and get some pumpkins and do a pumpkin carving. You know, as you get older, you'll find this out when you finally have a family. As your kids get older, you don't do those type of things. So probably I may try to see if they want to at least carve one pumpkin. And what I like to do is I like to take the pumpkin seeds. You're going to make fun of me. I love pumpkin seeds.
Are you going to make like potpourri or something out of it?
No, you take the pumpkin seeds and you take them out and you put them on you bake them and put some salt on them. You can buy pumpkin.
Dude,
I love pumpkins.
Why would I make fun of that? That's awesome.
Okay,
that's
I'm just saying. You looked at me. I'm like, yeah, but I love pumpkin seeds. I like the David one, so maybe something like that. But we'll probably have to carve a pumpkin because they don't go trick or treating anymore. And right. where we live, I don't think we have any trick or treaters are young enough to go. Do that.
Well,
maybe go scare a couple of kids.
Yeah, just do it. Just throw on a mask.
Put a Michael Myers mask on.
Yeah,
man.
throw on the pumpkin and throw pumpkin seeds.
Exactly. The pumpkin head. How about yourself?
Well, you know, I'm kind of pumped. Today is like the cool front's blowing in San Antonio, so it's going to be cool and dark, and it's going to make for a cool evening. Yeah, so I'm just going to find something on Netflix. I don't know what it is. On a 1 to 10 scale, I'm you know, thinking like a 6.5 on the scary scale, and I just want to watch that and enjoy, and just kind of, you know, I'm at a home Halloween enjoyer. You know, I haven't seen It yet, the one that came out last year. So
you should go ahead and order that on demand and get back and
I'm thinking about it. I mean, I'll text you just so I have something to do while it's going on. You know, be like, what's up, Tony? Yeah, this movie's like when the scary parts are happening. That's when I'll text you.
I'm not afraid to admit this, but when I'm at home and I'm watching, like Get Out, we talked about that earlier, I mean, which is a great movie, and, you know, different, you know, movies that have been really scary. I'm kind of the guy, if I'm at home, I got to make sure I put one of those night lights in or something.
Dude, totally with you. Yeah, like, I got to have a night light.
I got to have some lights on somewhere just to make sure, hey, wait a second. Hey, I just want to make sure this is just a movie.
The night light's got to be on. The door's got to be locked. The alarm's got to be on. I got to have a snack that's loud because I don't like the silence in the movie. It's a process. That's what I'll be doing.
Halloween's the greatness of Halloween.
But enjoy the pumpkin patch. Enjoy the pumpkin seeds. We'll be back tomorrow for another episode of the 750 as we get ready for the Tennessee Titans. Lots of changes, Tony. Hopefully good ones. Hopefully everything's good. Hopefully we're rolling into Thanksgiving with a couple of more wins under our belt. You know, enjoy the pumpkin seeds, like I said, and make sure you share them. Yeah, I know they're good.
Almond joys, baby.
Gross. Disgusting. Everyone have a good day. We'll see you.
I cannot believe that. You too, RJ.
We'll see you tomorrow. This was the 750.
Hello, I'm Spencer Hall from SB Nation, and I want to tell you about my new show, It Seems Smart. It Seems Smart is a show about people doing things that, for some reason or another, seem smart at the time. Those things might include doing a little cocaine and driving a bike up a mountain. Or, I don't know, maybe racing 100 miles per hour across the country in the middle of the night with no one's permission. Or even stealing a bat from an umpire's room in a Major League Baseball park. Check it out, and if you like it, tell a friend. I'm Spencer Hall. Don't do anything smart.
Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Want to get a little more from every sip? Smartwater Alkaline doesn't just taste crisp and pure. It's loaded with everything you need to perform at your best, whether you're running marathons or boardroom meetings. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.